This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Right On, showcasing the work of Otago Southland writers. I'm Beverly Martins. Join me for news and interviews with local writers on the second Wednesday of every month from noon till 1 and replayed the following Sunday at 1 p.m. Right On is brought to you by the Otago Southland branch of the New Zealand Society of Authors and kindly supported by the great team at the University Bookshop.
What do you want to be when you grow up? They say you are what you read, and the University Bookshop can help you be whoever you want to be. Do you want to be an athlete? Then sit down with an inspiring sports biography. Do you fancy yourself as a detective? We have a grisly lineup of murder mysteries waiting just for you. Do you aspire to be the world's greatest chef? We have cookbooks to tantalise your taste buds. Do you want to celebrate your inner child? Play up in our fabulous children's room. The University Bookshop, helping you decide what you want to be when you grow up.
Good afternoon and welcome to Write On, the monthly show about Otago Southland writers and their latest book projects, kindly sponsored by the good folk at the University Bookshop. I'm Beverly Martins and my first interview today is on the newly published diaries of one of Dunedin's favourite sons, playwright Robert Lord. He was born mid-last century and died sadly aged just 47 in 1992 here in Dunedin. Now, a lot of Dunedinites will recognise his name attached to a small but perfectly formed cottage in Titan Street, which continues to host visiting writers long after his death some 30 years ago. Dr. Chris Brickell was with me. Now, Chris is a professor in gender studies at the University of Otago, and he's written extensively on the history of gay men in New Zealand, including his award-winning book, Mates and Lovers, and he's one of the editors of these newly published Robert Lord diaries. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Beverly.
So I guess my first question is, I mean, diaries are pretty personal, so why did you want to publish Robert's diaries?
The trust that oversees the diaries had a few requests from people who were interested in Robert and a feeling that there's a bit of resurgence of interest in him, and this seemed like a good time to put this out there. Robert talks about his diaries as both personal but also something that he was depositing with the Hocken Library in Dunedin. So they're in a public library, so we thought, well, it would be quite nice to get them out there for people to have a bit of a read about. And my own interest in this was getting a gay playwright who hasn't been talked about much recently out in the public spotlight, and because the diaries are so amazing and because they're so personal, they're so interesting.
They are. They're a real mix of kind of, there's a bit of who's who in there, not that he's trying to do that, because these are just, you know, people he knows.
Yeah.
But there's kind of, there's quite a social history of sort of New Zealanders in New York at the same time as him too, isn't
there? Yes, there is. So playwrights like Roger Hall, for instance, went over to New York to visit Robert. And so there was a bit of a New Zealand community over there, and there are lots of other names that I didn't recognise.
That were kind of passing through.
And George Webby, for instance, who was based in Wellington. And so there was a sense of a kind of a connection between the New Zealand artistic life and an expatriate or visitor artistic life in New York, which is kind of cool. And then famous people like Meryl Streep was in one of his plays, for instance, which is kind of fantastic.
So I guess the other thing too that interested me is that you're one of three editors for the book. So there's Vanessa Manhire and Nonita Rees as well. Now, that's quite unusual to have three editors, isn't it? And how was that process of you working together? Like, you know, how did you claim your...
Oh my goodness, well, it worked incredibly well because Nonita knew Robert. She knew him really well. She was involved in Play Market with him. In fact, she helped him set it up. And she acted in one of his plays, and she was a good friend of his. Vanessa's an editor, but she also spent a lot of time in New York. And so we had different areas of expertise, and so this worked perfectly. Vanessa pursued the New York connection, and there's quite an extensive set of footnotes in the book where Vanessa was tracing people through. Nonita and I worked on a list of his plays. I wrote most of the introduction and did most of the photo research. So we actually all took a little bit of the project and split up what actually was quite a chunk him out of labour
right,
between the
quite
three
complex,
of us.
So in fact,
quite complex.
Looking back now, you probably think actually we needed three of you.
Thank goodness, yeah. Actually,
right.
is my memory of it. And we got this out fairly quickly because Otago University Press had a publishing slot. So we were working over Christmas. We were working pretty intensively on this, and it kind of got bigger and bigger, because as we found friends, we would find some more photos, and as we found who someone else was, then we'd discover their ex-partner or ex-flatmate. So it was quite a little network.
Did you then, I mean, there must have been things that you actually couldn't physically fit in the book. Did they then go to the hawker? Like, did the archive generally about Robert expand because of this?
We have discovered a few things that will go to the hawker. But the Hocken archive is incredibly extensive, so it's got multiple versions of his play scripts. Excuse me. It's got an enormous photographic collection. It's got the diaries. It's got some short stories. It's got treatments for film and movie projects, some of which happened, some of which didn't. So, The Hocken is a Dunedin treasure, right? Mm. And it's got a very extensive Robert Lord archive. It's a wonderful archive.
I think it feels like you've sort of busted it open and let people know that now. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I think there's a real, what we focused on in the book was his life a bit more than his work, although we weave his work into it, and I read over 20 of his plays in order to try and get the context in my own head, because I wasn't very familiar with Robert before that. But there's material in the Hocken that will allow people to do a really careful analysis of his playwriting if they choose to do that. So there's more in the Hocken archive than we have used.
Of course, yeah. Mm. So what do you think what was some of the key things that you learnt about Robert in editing this book?
I think one of the things that interests me, in a sense, is the tension between someone's personal private persona and their public persona. Mm. So he comes across in many parts of the book as quite hesitant about himself and his relationships and his work, but in public, I gather he was quite garrulous and confident. Yeah. So there's that sense of someone having another inner life that you don't always see in public, but that a diary gives you access to. And I think, I mean, I'm quite interested in what moving from place to place means for people. And so there are a lot of New Zealand authors, including Dunedin authors like Charles Brash, for instance, who have this sense of moving from one place to another and becoming someone different. Mm. So the sense of who was the New York Robert and who was the New Zealand Robert and who was the Robert who lived with his parents in Auckland and who was the Robert who found a place in Dunedin, a city which he really loved, even though his relationship with New Zealand was quite tense, because New York in the 1970s and 80s was such a vastly different place from Te Puke and the place where his family lived and
really
Paiatu and
so
on.
Yeah, you know, it was quite schizoid, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I guess probably because he writes about more of those things in New York, you know, there's the kind of party boy side of things. And then here, you know, and that's quite a culture clash from... He didn't really, I'm not sure, but he didn't really seem to be quite out in New Zealand, did he? I mean, he did amongst his theatre community, but not perhaps personally. Is that right?
I think that's a fair way to put it. He talks about his parents and his parents' friends, particularly his parents' friends and relatives, asking him what life is like in New York. And he says, shall I tell them about the really racy bits? No, I won't. I'll lie about that. So there's that sense of a bit of a double life and a bit of holding back.
Yeah,
I think that's right.
And I think he was a very considerate person too. So I think he would probably think of... Yeah. You know, the impact on people, because he did go from one place to the other, and you know, he probably thought, well, you know, I'm going to go back to New York, but these people, you know, my family isn't. So I think there was sort of that. Something that really struck me is that I think one of the entries, he described himself as manic depressive, which was kind of the phrase back then, as I guess we use the word bipolar now. But do you think that was true, or do you think that was just the age-old struggle between having money or needing money to live while you're trying to create work? Because that just comes through time and time again, isn't it? He's, you know, the phone gets cut off, he's behind in rent, and he just continually, it's a struggle. So I think that, you know, the impact of that on your creativity is as much as anything. So I'm not sure where you sit on kind of that.
I'm not sure either, because there's that one mention in the diary, and when you mention to people that he described himself in that way, they seem a little surprised. So I'm not, yes, I'm not sure, but that about the manic depressive aspect, but the juggle is so much there,
isn't
you
it?
Know. He absolutely, he would get in a bit of money and then, you know, he would pay it out on bills immediately, then he'd have an airfare, film company would say, come to New Zealand and do this project, and then he'd get here and they cancel it. So there
yes,
was
he was often travelling hopefully, so to speak, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
He went to
yeah.
LA for a while to try and find some work, but nothing really much came of that. But then I think one of the things about Robert is that his most successful play was Joyful and Triumphant, and that was put on after he had died from AIDS.
Yes.
And so that was terribly sad. And yeah. I've had a careful look through some of the rewritings of some of his plays, and they become more conventional as he works his way through the different iterations. And I wondered if that was to make them more
commercially acceptable.
Acceptable.
So to try and get more in sync with the New Zealand audiences of the time,
yes.
maybe.
Yeah,
I mean, I've got to say
right.
that Joyful and Triumphant is still my favourite Robert Lord play. And I love that they often play it on national radio at Christmas time.
Oh, yes.
And I didn't, until I read the diaries, actually realise that the working titles were either the Christmas play or
yes.
the Boxing Day play.
Yes, yes.
But I just love that 40-year span in the family and the real changing thing between kind of the, you know, the kind of blue ribbon, rural sorts of things, and then life just changing and social mores changing and where they kind of end up. And there's quite a shift, isn't
there?
Yes,
there is a real shift. And I had wondered for a while how Robert seemed quite in tune with New Zealand politics of those different decades. And then I discovered he had a political science major in his arts degree.
Right.
So that explained that. But there are these sort of awarenesses of the context, which he was quite good at. And things like there's one character who has a relationship and a child with a Māori man and then lives with a woman for a while. And there's this kind of fluidity of identity that's quite a Robert Lord theme. And that sense of the tension between traditional society and emerging forms of social life and mores, that's a real Robert theme as well. So it speaks to themes that are really strong right the way back through his the middle of his playwriting career, back to his really quirky and fascinating early plays as well, that the theme of suburban life, to what extent does suburban life impose conformity on people and to what extent can people escape it? That's an incredibly strong Robert Lord theme that runs through pretty much every play.
And I just think that thing behind the curtains, you know, you know, you can look down the street and things can look very serene and whatever, but you don't know. The different houses.
You don't, right. And he has this wonderful piece about Christchurch where he says that Christchurch was incredibly empty, but there must be a lot going on behind the curtains, behind closed doors.
Yes.
And so Christchurch in particular struck him as being a place where the intricacies of life and the complexities of people's emotions all happen behind closed doors.
Well, I mean, you know, it's probably the most English of our cities, or it certainly was back then.
Yes.
Right, so one of the key things that I'm, you know, we're all forever grateful for is him co-founding Play Market, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. And I just, I'm a member of Play Market, and I just got the annual just last week, and I just want to read a couple of things because this particular annual focuses on the kind of history of Play Market. This is just a little excerpt that they put into the annual. The very first company meeting took place around Robert Lord's bed in a tiny flat on Clifton Terrace. Judy remembers that he had a particularly nice patchwork quilt. And then, back in the 70s, another snippet. The first royalty check came in 1974 for Robert Lord's balance of payments, apt title, at the Hawera Repertory. It was for $2.50, and Play Market took its clip of 25 cents. You know, so that just shows, like, such ground roots. You know, it was a group of passionate people. It wasn't like any kind of grants or structures or, you know, it was just like, we need to do this, we need to give the New Zealand voice. It's a bit like Charles Brash founding Landfall, I think, in a way.
It is, isn't
it?
There's a real parallel there. Can I just, I mean, two things. One, the quilt was probably made by his mum, who actually, in some of his photos, he makes notes that his bed coverings were created by his mother. So that's the first thing. The second thing is balance of payments, which is an extraordinarily wonderful and completely kooky play in which two parents send their son out as a rent boy, and when the son brings home insufficient amounts of money, his mother stabs him to death with her knitting needle. And then, in trying to cover up her tracks, she then shoots the vicar and a client of her son who turned up at the house, and it's just extraordinary.
I mean, you'd have to see the play, because it's to wonderful. Describe the, you know, to describe the plot is just, you know, you can't even get your head around it.
You can't even get your head around it. No,
but it's amazing how theatre can make that, can take you on those sorts of journeys, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And as a really early play, starting with his key themes of, you know, what does it mean to conform to society's expectations as a mother or a son or a father? So, you know, so he starts off that conversation really early on.
And then I guess, I mean, the diaries, they end in 1991, which is the year before his death. But there's, you know, he's pretty candid about what's going on with his health and trying to get the right medications and things over here, because there are more things available to help in the States than there are here. And there's this desperate sort of time where he's waiting at the mailbox for like 6 weeks or something for some AIDS drugs things.
Yeah. But he doesn't want his mum to know.
So he's down at the letterbox.
Hoping to intercept it before she finds out. So there's a sense of the kind of family secrets. And, you know, she was at his bedside a lot when he was dying. So there was a, you know, there was definitely a way of talking about it there. But it's incredibly sad. And the last kind of piece of the diary, he's driving back from Christchurch, where he's been for treatment for the brain tumour that he had.
Because he couldn't get it in Dunedin.
Because the machine was broken and the hospital wouldn't admit it, I think.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, he's kind of driving down with the grass flashing past along the roadside thinking about how he wants to get what he was at that point calling the Boxing Day play done. And he does.
But he doesn't get to see the production of it, which is really sad. And also, I guess, I was about to use the word upside, and that's not the right term, but he did know that he, you know, his health was failing and he was terminal. And so the kind of, with that, he had the grace to sort of organise his life, set up the cottage in Titan Street as being, you know, something for the future, for things like that. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
So the cottages are the building he described as the smallest house in the Southern Hemisphere, if not the world.
Yes.
And, he was involved in setting it up with his brother and Nonita and various others as a trust for visiting writers. And I think one of the things that comes through when you talk to friends of Robert's is how incredibly generous he was to them and to the writing community and to the art of writing. So it makes total sense that he would then want his cottage to be set up to continue on that support of writers, because he was a very supportive person.
And a very collaborative person.
And very collaborative,
I would say, I mean, I don't know that, I can't remember that. I used to know it when I did my walking tours, but I think it's at least 500 or more people have had access to that cottage over the years, haven't they?
And
it's
enormous
sort of 25
number.
Years. Yeah, and I mean, this summer we'll have the University Bookshop. Summer writers and residents will come and stay there for 6 weeks, and you know,
almost always full. I think there's so often someone staying there, and there's actually going to be an open day on the Sunday after the book is launched, so
Fantastic.
People have a chance to come.
Oh, well,
look
out for that. And for those of you who don't know, outside the Crake in the Octagon, there is a tiny little plaque on. In amongst the cobblestones that denotes the founding of Play Market in that where the new Athenaeum Theatre is now. Mm. So, you know, that's a lovely full circle thing.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's a little brass plaque. And, of course, Robert's got his plaque in the Octagon as well. So we've kind of talked about who you think the book's for, but do you want to just sort of reiterate who you think it's going to appeal to and why?
I think there's a number of different kind of groups of people who'll be interested in the book. I mean, it's a story of an expatriate writer and a writer more generally, and he talks about the struggles of writing and the process of writing. So writers, I think, will find it interesting. People who are interested in the history of theatre in New Zealand, because it contextualises his plays and puts them in relation to the work of other playwrights like Roger Hall. There's a real gay history here, and talking about what it's like to be a gay New Zealander, both here and in New York, and to be going backwards and forwards and thinking about what that means for your identity. And there's a bit of an AIDS history, which is something that's really, there's not much in New Zealand about people's experiences of living with HIV and AIDS in the 1980s. Mm. It's an oddly sparse kind of literature. And it's also just a really good read for people who enjoy diaries and learning about, you know, people's inner lives and the way that they relate to the society around them. He talks a bit about New Zealand in the 1970s and 80s, about the impact of Robert Muldoon, for instance, on the shaping of New Zealand culture. So there's also a history of New Zealand politics and culture and the relationship between those two things. So it's a multifaceted book, I think.
Fantastic, Chris. Thank you. And it will be available from now at all good bookshops, including, of course, the University Bookshop, for $45, published by Otago University Press. Thanks very much, Chris.
Thanks, Beverly.
Okay. Now, we'll take a short musical break now with a track from Greg Johnson's 2003 album, Here Comes the Caviar, which, as we've just attested, is wishful thinking for most artists. This track is called Save Yourself.
Exploring your mind, I found giant rivers, mountain ranges never climbed. I'm a great explorer, but now I'm lost inside your head. I don't have directions, just a heavy load instead. And you said you'd save me if I ever got lost. I said, well, baby, then you save the world. First you save yourself. First you save yourself. Then you save the world. First you save yourself. I'm a great believer in believing in you, but I don't have a compass, no plans for pushing through. I'm pinned down, bad weather's on the way. I need a shelter now. But first you save yourself, then you save the world. First you save yourself. First you save yourself, then you save the world. First you save yourself. You're such a brilliant pearl.
What do you want to be when you grow up? They say you are what you read, and the University Bookshop can help you be whoever you want to be. Do you want to be an athlete? Then sit down with an inspiring sports biography. Do you fancy yourself as a detective? We have a grisly lineup of murder mysteries waiting just for you. Do you aspire to be the world's greatest chef? We have cookbooks to tantalise your taste buds. Do you want to celebrate your inner child? Play up in our fabulous children's room. The University Bookshop, helping you decide what you want to be when you grow up.
Welcome back to the second half of Write On, brought to you by the University Bookshop. My final guests for this show are the Dunedin Writers and Readers Festival Director, Kitty Brown, and her associate, Jen Stokes.
Welcome. Kia ora.
Yeah.
Kia ora.
Welcome. So, Kitty, I'll start with you. This is your first festival as the director.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously months of planning and now it's just kind of 2 days away.
Yeah.
How did you kind of get the role? I mean, I know you've got a project and event management kind of background, which is obviously going to be extremely helpful. You know, why did you want the role and how's it been going?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I have a project and event management background in Otipoti, Dunedin, and I've produced lots of events here in the city. But what some people don't know is that I also have a publishing company called Reo Pepe, which is a bilingual publishing company where we make beautiful books for 0 to 5 year olds. So I'm a massive book nerd and I spend a lot of time at the library and visit the book bus regularly that comes out to Portobello. And so when I saw this role come up, I thought it's just the perfect storm of things that I love.
Right.
So yeah. Really
sort of
suited my
personal interface.
Suited my professional kind of skill set, but also was right up my alley in terms of what I love to do in my leisure time with books and reading.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And Jen, you've come on board. How did you kind of get into this?
Yeah, well, Kitty and I actually used to work in events together many, many years ago. And then I left Otipoti, did some other things, some marketing and things like that. And then I came back, and when Kitty got the role and the associate director role popped up, she shoulder tapped me and talked me into it. I'm also a big reader as well, so it sounded great, something new to do, and I was looking for a new challenge. So, yeah, it was the perfect fit.
Great.
Yeah.
So, program's out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To me, before we get into the sort of highlights of it, the central theme of this year's festival was sort of where the river meets the sea. Can you guys expand on that? Why that and how that came about?
Yeah, the theme for the festival is Te Pū Ao, where the river meets the sea. Te Pū Ao is river mouth in Te Reo Māori, and it also can mean daybreak, the time when the night meets the day. So we thought that was a lovely kind of metaphor for a meeting place, a dynamic, vibrant place where things can unfold, meetings can be made, and yeah, where the river meets the sea. It just made sense to us. We looked around for a theme for a while, and we thought about like focusing on words. Some of the themes that have been part of festivals recently are radical hope and awakenings and things like that. So we were looking, you know, we were thinking, oh, what are the words that kind of describe what we're trying to do?
Yeah.
And we have a focus on Te Reo Māori and Kaupapa Māori. We really wanted to centre that in this year's program. So, yeah, when we found Te Pū Ao, we thought that works really well.
Right.
Mm.
Yes, I did notice that there is quite a focus on Māori writers this year.
Mm.
How did that sort of come about? Because obviously you two are part of a wider organising committee of about 8 or 9 of you.
Mm.
Just talk through that.
There's a
conscious decision.
The ecosystem behind the Dunedin Writers and Readers Festival is there's a board, and the board have been on a kind of decolonisation journey. They've been doing some study and some courses and some thinking, and wanted to have a bicultural kind of lens on the festival this year. So, yeah, it was a really conscious decision by the board, and part of that was to bring in the inaugural curator Māori, Jacinta Ruru and Angela Wanhala, to, yeah, just bring the expertise, bring their wairua to the kaupapa, and they really did that, and it stretched out across throughout the whole program from the theme and onwards into the planning of it.
So it's like once you make a decision, everything kind of
sort
of follows.
From there.
Their intention
was set.
Was always there. Yes. Which leads us to obviously some of the new venues that you've got this year, including the Marae. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, that was Jacinta and Angela wanting to start the festival in the way that they meant to go on, and to centre the Marae as a welcoming place. And it fits with the theme because Otako Marae is sort of just about at the river mouth. We know the Otako Harbour is Te Awa Otako in our hapu, and so we see that the Marae sits right on that welcoming place. So it just really
made sense. I love it about event organisation, though. It makes sense in hindsight. You know, but as you're exploring and thinking, oh, what about this? What about that? And, you know, like, this might work, that might, you know, like, it's quite a process, isn't it? How long have you been working on it?
Well, I came on in June, but Kitty, you came on in April.
A good solid 6 months or so, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then the board previous to that were, I mean, they were the ones that set the dates, and then Kitty and I came on board and we were working towards those dates, so, yeah.
Great. So, I mean, there's lots of highlights, obviously, including the big gala night on Friday night with Whittier Hiramaira. Do you want to sort of talk through the kind of that event? Because that's the big showcase, isn't it?
the big one.
Yeah.
Such a beautiful event, and so much rooted and grounded in the culture of this city, actually, because we needed a venue for that event, and the Regent was the kind of solid choice for us, but then we had some financial difficulties, and you know, as you do in the running of events, and as you go along, and we thought, oh, actually, we're not sure if we can afford to be in the Regent anymore. And they came on board and said, look, we still really want to have you, and we want to do this, and we are going to sponsor the gala to be in the Regent. So the Regent's kia ora to the Regent Theatre.
Kia ora.
We can't wait to be there on Friday night. It's going to be super grand. I love going to the Regent.
Yeah.
For anything.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a certain gutsiness that's kind of,
glitz and glam.
Just feels good to be in there. And so, yeah, I'm really looking forward to welcoming a whole lot of authors that are coming from out of town, a whole lot of guests that are coming from out of town to the Regent, and kind of showcase the venue, showcase Dunedin in that way. And Strawberry Sound, shout out to Strawberry Sound, have also sponsored the event. So we'll have the really good tech there with Strawberry on board as well. And I feel like Strawberry go across a lot of events in Dunedin. And, you know, they help to bring the flavour of what we do in this town with our events. And, yeah, so
I also think it feels like a, you know, after the COVID years and things, you know, to actually have a focused event at the Regent is quite special, isn't it? It's like we're back.
Yeah, totally.
And we're really looking forward to having Stacey Morrison. She's our MC for the night. And obviously Whittier Hiramaira. We've got lots of local people coming, David Eagleton. We have the Poet Laureate, Chris Teese is going to be there, Ruby Solly and Ariana Tikau. They'll be playing some beautiful instruments.
And Fiona Farrell.
Fiona Farrell's going to be there.
That could be quite a quite a...
A bevy.
Yeah, I want to say the word variety show, but that sounds like it's too light. But it's
it will be that sort of way.
Yeah. A little bit of everything. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, and there'll be some surprises in there as well.
Good, you know? I know. I kept it quite vague in the program, and I like that. I think.
Just come to the radio, get your good rags on, and just come.
Just go and embrace it. Some other highlights for me, I think, over the weekend are going to be Emma Espinner, Fiona, Monty Souter, Emily Wrights, Barbara Else. That's my personal ones. Mm-hmm. Where are you at with things? And
Well, actually, the Catherine Mansfield event is proving to be incredibly popular to the point that we've actually had to move the venue.
Right.
So it was in the Athenaeum Library, but we've moved to the Community Gallery now so that we have more space for people because it's incredibly popular.
Do you want to just talk through the kind of format of that?
Yeah, so we have Redmer Yiska, who has written a new book, and he is being interviewed by Michelle Alvey, who's chairing the session. Mm-hmm. And
I'm sure all of you know, but Michelle Alvey is our branch chair for the Otago Southland.
There you go. Snap, snap, snap.
Authors. Yeah, and she's doing a brilliant job of that.
Yeah, so she's chairing that session with Redmer. And we also actually have Albie Hales, who is the, what was he, 2021 New Zealand Bake Off winner. And he is giving providing some cupcakes for that event.
Mansfield-inspired cupcakes.
He's a big Mansfield fan. And we also have music that will be there as well, live music happening at that event.
Yes, a duo, violin and a cello.
Yes.
Because Mansfield was a massive classical music fan, so...
Oh, that sounds charming.
Yes. Oh, it's going to be lovely.
It's quiet.
And tickets, that one there is presented by the Otago University Press.
Yes.
So they are putting that together with us. And I feel like it might sell out, although we've got a few tickets left.
A handful of tickets left, but it's very popular. So if you're planning on coming along, I would recommend you book your tickets ASAP.
Now, let's just talk about tickets and how to get them and... you know, the different channels that people can go through because obviously, you know, it's only a couple of days away now. So time's of the essence. So do you want to just go through that?
Yeah, if you want to purchase tickets, you can book them online direct on our website. If you want to go to the gala night, though, you have to purchase those through the Regent Theatre. So you can pop into the box office or buy them online or give them a call. And if you don't love... using websites for purchasing tickets, you can just send us a message and we can give you a call and you can purchase tickets over the phone. We're happy to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
So just, I'm sure most people know this, but you're talking about the website being dunedinwritersfestival.co.nz.
That's the one.
Right. And when you said send a message if you don't like using the website, do you mean send a message via the website?
Yeah, you can contact us directly through the website.
Right.
Yeah.
And or put your phone number in, and then people will call you back.
Or on Facebook or social media.
Yes. Right,
we
brilliant.
We can do that.
Yeah.
And we also have free events on the program, so don't let ticket prices be a barrier. There's quite a lovely selection of free events. All our poetry events are free, and some of our kaupapa Māori events are free. So, yeah.
And another interesting venue is Woof, isn't it? The bar down in Lower Stuart Street. That's going to be a poetry night and a half, isn't it?
Night and a half
will be. Not for me. It'll be
for some people.
Yeah. So at Woof Bar on Saturday night, which is also election night, we will be hosting the political poetry soapbox. That's presented by the Honetū Whare Trust, who have come on board to curate our poetry events this year. And they are celebrating the legacy of Hone and his pub poetry love and politics. So it's just going to be a soapbox, literally a soapbox, for people, poets to get up on and just bring their uncompromising voices to the fore.
Brilliant.
Can't wait.
No, that'll be sparkling with energy.
Yeah.
What particular sessions... each of you, if you had to pick one, what would it be? Jen, we'll start with you.
I would have to say probably
one of the ones with Helen Lindorf. We've actually got two sessions with Helen. She wrote A Forager's Life. It's a memoir.
Right.
And Liv. Well, but Liv wrote The Fungi of Aotearoa, which actually when it came out, you could not get a copy of it.
Mm.
And so they had to do several more reprints. So I think that we will have some at the festival. So if you want to get your hands on one of those books. So I just finished reading Helen's book, A Forager's Life, and it's just lovely. She's just such a lovely person, and she had so much information about the different types of plants that you can get. She's got recipes throughout the book, and it's just a really, I think it gave me a little bit of permission to be a little bit cheeky and, you know, sort of do some more foraging and
with more confidence.
More obviously. Confidence, well, yeah. And just sort of, you know, trying new things and all sorts of different teas and things that you can make from plants that you would just think were weeds.
Right.
So,
brilliant.
Plant wisdom.
Kitty?
What would your top pick be? I can't. It's like choosing a favourite child.
Yes.
But I'm so pumped for the Fierce Hope Ihu Matau chapter.
Right.
I think it's a real honour to have Kiani Matata Sepu in town. She's one of the cousin activists that began and followed through with the whole Ihu Matau protest. She's been incorporated into the festival by Karen Nguyen, who wrote Fierce Hope and is a phenomenal researcher of activism in Aotearoa. And, yeah, I'm really looking forward to diving deep on that one.
And the sort of first-hand account if you get of something that essentially was quite an Auckland sort of story.
Yeah, we saw the news media, didn't we? But right, to hear the story straight from the front line.
Disconnected from some of those things this far south. So, that'll be a really one-off opportunity.
And Kiani is actually an award-winning photographer, so she's as well as a phenomenal writer and activist, so she's bringing her photographs to show.
Oh, fantastic.
Of the protest as well.
So so that will make it real for people.
And it's hosted by Manaia Tufari, so Hone's granddaughter. I can't get much better than that.
No, there's a lot of fantastic kind of intergenerational links in this program, isn't there?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I'm sure it's going to go really well. Thank you so much for your mahi, because it's a very, you know, it's a big thing to take on, and, you know, you do it with good heart, but you don't know until you know, and, you know, you just try and put it out in front of the people and hope that they will respond, which clearly they're doing if you're really having to change venues for some of the events. What's next for you guys, apart from the old cup of tea and the lie down? In your case, you know, tea that you've made
by foragers tea.
Yes. You know, what next?
I've actually got an exciting new role to take on with Pai Manu, which is the Ngāi Tahu Artist Collective.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yeah, so I'm going to be working with them to deliver a number of projects in the Kaitahu visual arts culture.
Fantastic. Jen, do you know you?
Yeah, well, the Dunedin Writers and Readers Festival is a biennial event. Mm-hmm. So next year in the off year, I actually will be picking up the contract to start organising the 2025 festival.
Yes. Right.
So, and hopefully Kitty's going to come back on board when that happens.
Oh, it sounds like you might be flipping roles there.
I'll be shoulder tapping Kitty.
Yes, assisting who. Well, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in. So,
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, so Festival Director Kitty Brown and Associate Director Jen Stokes, thank you so much. And get out there, people. Buy tickets. There's some unique events. You won't have the chance again, so enjoy it.
Yeah, come here. We'll see you at the festival. Yes. We look forward to seeing you all there.
And meanwhile, to all our listeners, keep reading and keep writing. And my name is Beverly Martins, and I'll talk to you next time. Thank you.
What do you want to be when you grow up? They say you are what you read, and the university bookshop can help you be whoever you want to be. Do you want to be an athlete? and sit down with an inspiring sports biography. Do you fancy yourself as a detective? We have a grisly lineup of murder mysteries waiting just for you. Do you aspire to be the world's greatest chef? We have cookbooks to tantalise your taste buds. Do you want to celebrate your inner child? Play up in our fabulous children's room, the University Bookshop, helping you decide what you want to be when you grow up.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.